Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, hello. This is Ryan Summers, and this is the Aspie Tribe podcast. Welcome. I don't even know what episode this is, actually. We got to be getting close to 10. We're back. It's been a month or two since the last episode, so just a lot of crazy stuff going on. I do a big event here where we live every year at the end of September. One of my obsessions has always been old Volkswagen vans, and camper vans, and buses, and things like that. So I started this event where we live about 5 years ago, called Bayfield Volkfest, and it's at the end of September every year. And this was the fifth year we did it, and so the whole month of September is really eaten up by a lot of the organizing for that event. It's pretty fun. And then in October we went away for 10 days to BC, to Vancouver Island. It was fantastic. Jen and River and I, I've got some family out there in the Comox Valley area and good friends in Victoria. So we spent 10 days on the island, and it was just amazing. Like, I could not have asked for a more perfect 10 days. Just amazing to see people we love and just get some time away from our lives and have some fun. And we had just beautiful, beautiful times and weather, and we took the ferry and we saw whales, and we went to the mountain and to Fino, to the beach for a couple days. It rained a lot there, but I mean, just being by the ocean makes me so happy. And the mountains, just the air out there is so clean, and the power of the ocean is just so beautiful. So I don't know, something about it, I miss it dearly. And anyway, so it's been a little crazy, so I haven't done a podcast. We're back now. I am struggling immensely with allergies. I've had this allergy problem for 14, 15 months now. It's just been crazy, and there's something about the air here in Ontario that it's like, when we got back, we got off the plane, and within hours, it's like my head just fills up with cement. It feels like my head gets filled up with cement that's like expanding inside my head. So there's just this pressure, and my whole, all my nasal sinuses are just clogged with like cement. It's like I can't, like, blow and blow, and it just feels like it doesn't move, and then it's like, but then sometimes there's this drip, and then this like battery acid drip down the back of my throat, and my face is itchy, and I'm sorry to describe it like this. It's probably really annoying to listen to, but I'm just really struggling. I'm sorry if my voice sounds weird. It's just, I'm so stuffed up. My skin is itchy. My face is puffy. My eyes are itchy and watery. And I don't know what to do. It's making me nuts. Like, I'm losing my mind. It's been 14 months of this. And I just, I don't know. It's hard. I go to BC and I'm on the island and the air is clean and I'm in the mountains and by the ocean. And I just think, like, and my symptoms out there just go away. Like, I still had a bit of a runny nose, but that was it for the whole 10 days. And then I come back and it's just like, it feels like someone just shoved a pipe into my head and filled it up with cement. It just is awful. So it's just like a headache for the whole time we've been back. So anyway, sorry, I'll stop complaining. Just life. But I'm going to try to get back into this. I renamed the podcast, renamed it Aspie Tribe. The adulting with Asperger's was, I liked the concept of what it was about. It's just really like for adults trying to live with Asperger's and, you know, high functioning autism, etc. But it just didn't really roll off the tongue in a way I liked. And I wanted something kind of shorter, easier to say, and maybe even convey a little bit more of a positive vibe or some fun. And so I was just playing around. And then when we were in BC, I just woke up in the middle of the night one day and just with the words Aspie Tribe. And I thought, yeah, that's it. Like, I like the word tribe. One of my favorite music groups is the Tribe Called Quest. So, I mean, that's kind of cool. And I just like the word tribe. It's, and I feel like that is this whole journey of discovery with learning about my Asperger's and my ADHD and all this other stuff. And then once I got into doing this podcast and then all these different online chat groups and people I've connected with, and I just really feel like I'm connecting with my tribe. It's like, oh my God, these are my people. They get me. I get them. It's like, it feels cool to like not feel so alone and just feel like I have a tribe. It's weird too, because like a lot of us are kind of loners. So I think it's funny because I am a loner. Like I'm perfectly happy being alone the majority of the time. Like I right now is I'm home alone. It's my day off. I'm not working, and you know, Jen's at work and River's at kindergarten, and I'm just home alone. And it's like, I love this. It's I need it, but I also need people, you know, like we all do. But you know, I think a lot of us require a lot more alone time than most people do, and that's fine. But I also think we do need a tribe, and we are a tribe, and I feel like I've found my tribe. So anyway, I've renamed it. So Aspie Tribe going forward. I'm pretty happy with that. Came up with a little logo just for fun for the social medias and stuff. I'm probably going to make some stickers soon with that. I got a buddy near us who makes stickers, so I'm going to get him to print me off some so I can stick one on the back of my car. And if anyone wants one, let me know. I'll post about it on the Facebook and Instagram. And, you know, if anyone wants to get a sticker. A couple things to talk about.
I'm just looking at my notes here. New name, logo. I'm working on a website that I'm hoping to have up soon. In the meantime, everything's on like Facebook. So when I post each episode to Facebook, if there's any notes or links in relation to that episode, I'll put them in the comments on Facebook until I get an actual website up, which I'm working on. Speaking of which, the Facebook page is now at somewhere near 250 likes, which is, you know, small potatoes in the grand scheme of Facebook, but it's amazing for me that's happened. I mean, it's just cool. I didn't really have any expectation when I started this thing, and the actual podcast itself is now at over 3,000 listens, which, again, is like nothing in the grand scheme of podcasts, but for this, for me, it's just really cool. I mean, that's 3,000 times that somebody chose to press play on this podcast and listen to it, and that's really neat. And And what's even more important to me is the feedback I get, like the comments and messages from people who have listened and are affected by it or appreciate it or have shared stuff back with me, or, you know, comments I get or messages of people saying that this podcast has helped in some way. I mean, that's just the best thing in the world. So that's awesome. Yeah, so here we go. For this show, I wanted to go through, there's this really neat video I found on CBC, which is the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and they do this series called You Can't Ask That, where I guess they, like, people submit questions anonymously that they'd be too embarrassed to ask openly, and they get people with, like, different conditions to answer these questions. So they did an episode on autism, and it's really neat. I mean, the first time I watched it, I just was like, wow, okay, this is really cool, and just hearing the different people talk about it, answer these questions, and, you know, obviously, like, just, God, like, relating to so much of it. So I thought I would just kind of go through that, play a bit of that for you, and then I'll kind of go through and pause a few times and answer some of the questions myself and talk about it. I don't have a whole lot planned for today. Like, I just wanted to get back in the habit of doing this show, even if it's more sometimes just shorter or stream of consciousness or just kind of checking in. But I want to just work on the consistency of getting this podcast out more regularly and not being such a perfectionist about it, and not that I don't know, maybe I haven't been, I don't know, but trying to make it quality, obviously, but not not be like so worried about having such a big plan that it takes forever to plan it and then I just don't do it, because, you know, life is busy and there's a lot going on, and I feel like if I can just carve out a couple hours once a week to do it, then that'll be good. Still got some books I'm reading, and I guess to update everybody too on my own progress, like, it's such an interesting process from, like, I don't know, 6 months ago or 8 months ago when I started and decided, like, okay, I'm going to, like, really, like, lean into this and research it and figure it out. And my first conversation was with my doctor, my family doctor, who pretty much dismissed my concerns. I think the exact quote was, "Everybody feels like that sometimes," which is sort of like, yeah, everybody does feel like a lot of things sometimes, but it's like everybody... You know, that's like if someone's like, hey, I have depression, and I've had depression, like, I've been depressed every day of my life for my entire adult life, and somebody just goes, well, everybody gets depressed sometimes, and you go, well, yeah, but that's not what I'm talking about. Like, everybody can experience, like, negative life events and go through, like, periods of depression, like, you lose your job, or a family member dies, or your house burns down. It's like, these things can trigger depressions that are, you know... gonna happen, but that's not the same as, like, somebody who just has depression and, like, just lives in a state of depression all the time, or has, like, bipolar or something. And it's like the same with, like, the symptoms of you know, Asperger's or ASD. It's like, you go, okay, well, what are these things? And it's like, well, you know, difficulty with understanding, like, social cues and, like, literal language and trouble with eye contact and, like, sensory processing stuff, and you know, the list goes on. We all know these list of things, and then your doctor goes, yeah, well, everyone feels like that sometimes. And it's like, yeah, I get that, man. Like, everybody sometimes goes somewhere and it's too loud for them, and they're like, ah, it's too loud here, like, let's leave. Like, everybody experiences that, but does everybody experience that, like, all the time, every day, in regular circumstances where other people are not experiencing that? I don't know. You know, like, no, they don't. And it's, like, same with, like, you know, I was talking to my doctor and explaining just, like, the difficulty I have with with conversations and like following a conversation with different people, like connecting the dots, and like I get all lost. And he's like, yeah, everybody feels like that sometimes. And I'm like, yeah, I know everyone feels like that sometimes, but I feel like that all the time. Like, I just am constantly stressed and lost in conversations. If I'm having a conversation with one person, it's hard enough for me to understand what the hell they're talking about and explain my point of view. And then if I'm having a conversation with two people, I just shut down, or I just leave. I walk away, because it's like I can't even understand. Like, I can't keep up. I get interrupted constantly, like, because it takes me longer to, like, formulate a sentence, and then I'll be about to say something, and then someone else is talking, and then, or they're talking back and forth to each other, but I don't follow what they're talking about, and then, or they'll ask me something, and I'll start saying something, but then halfway through my sentence, I get interrupted, and I just, you know, all this, and then I just go, okay, cool, and I just walk away, and then they get mad at me, because, like, I'm being rude now, because I'm walking away, and they think I'm all, like, in a huff, but I'm like, I'm not necessarily in a huff about it. I'm just not going to waste my time being in a stressful situation that's not productive for me. So I'm just kind of like, okay, this conversation doesn't work for me, so you guys have the conversation that you're already having without me, and then just let me know what you decide at the end, because, like, there's no point in me being here in this conversation. And then, you know, getting into, like, God, if it's a larger group, like, you know, like, God forbid I'm in a room with 10 people. It's just like, I just can't even follow. I just retreat into my own head, you know? And then I think that's a lot of where my, like, performing stuff comes from too. Like, why it's like in a situation like that, like, I either have to be performing where I have everybody's attention, and then I'm, like, in control of what's happening. Like, I can kind of control what's going on, or I just have to, like, sort of retreat and zone out, and then I'm either, like, either I leave, or I'm, like, sitting in the corner, like, reading, or looking at my phone, or something, you know. But you talk to a doctor about this stuff, and it's like, they just kind of go, oh, everyone feels like that sometimes. I'm like, yeah, but does everyone feel like this 24/7? Does everyone feel like this their entire life, with almost every conversation they have? Because no, they don't. So that's what I'm talking about, you know. And then the same thing, you'll get somebody go, oh, well, you know, you're making eye contact. And I'm like, yeah, because I've worked my entire life to make eye contact. I don't like making eye contact. The entire time I'm making eye contact with you, I'm, like, conscious of it. And in my head, I'm, like, running this program of, like, okay, look away now. Okay, look back at them now. Okay, look away now. Okay, look back at them now. Do they think I'm looking at them enough? Am I looking at their eyes enough? Am I looking away too much or not enough? Now, am I staring at them too much? Is that weird? Okay, now I'm going to look away for a bit. Okay, have I looked away long enough? Now can I look back? Do I need to look to the right or to the left? Like, what's natural? Do I look up? Do I look down? When I look away from them, which direction should I look? And I'm running this whole conversation in my head about the eye contact while we're talking. It's like, that's not normal. That's fucking autism. And it's like, you try to, but to talk to a doctor about this, and they're, you know, it's frustrating because I was just dismissed. And then I went to a psychologist and spent $100 to see a psychologist who told me that, oh, well, you have tattoos. So, you know, people with autism don't get tattoos. They can't handle getting tattoos. I was like, what? I never heard of that. So I went home right after, and I went on my support group's Facebook group, and I posted that. And, like, half of the people in my autism support group have tattoos. Everyone's like, nope, that's bullshit. Some of them are like, they even found the process of getting tattooed pleasurable because something about, like, the high concentration and even the sound of the machine. So it's like these things that doctors or psychologists will say, like, it's like they don't know. And again, I'm not saying anything bad about that doctor or about that psychologist. They were both perfectly fine people who I'm sure are great at their jobs, but they're just not educated about this. So it's like, you can see why when you're in your 40s and you're going seeking a diagnosis of something, there's this automatic thing of people like, well, you would have known by now. Like, you know, if you had autism, like, they would have found that when you were in school. And you're like, well, actually, no, because they didn't start knowing about it till I was already, like, finishing high school. You know what I mean? So it's like there's this whole generation that missed that. And then these other things, like they'll talk about certain symptoms. Oh, you can't get tattoos. And you're like, well, no, I can. And I did. And I've, you know, it's like that has nothing to do with it. So I don't know. It's just weird going through this process. I got a little disheartened because I didn't know where to turn, especially because we live in a rural area. And the closest city is an hour and a bit away. And I got a couple numbers for places there with, like, doctors who are trained in autism. But I called, and they're not taking on new people because this is a very underserved community. And I called a couple other places, and I just couldn't find anybody. Or, you know, or it was, like, cost prohibitive where it's, like, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars. I just recently, somebody sent me a link to a place in Guelph, apparently run by somebody who has autism and ADHD, and it's like they do diagnosis and support and everything. So that's not too far away. That's like an hour and a bit away, 2 hours maybe. So I'm gonna, I've contacted them. They messaged me back and said they'll be in touch to set up an appointment. I gotta find out how much it's gonna cost. You know, I don't have a ton of money, so, you know, all of this is not easy. But it's worth doing if I can. I'm going to spend the money if I can to do it. Because, you know, it's important for some reason. I don't really know why I need a diagnosis, like, officially. Because I know what I know. I've done a lot of research. I mean, I've spent the last 6-8 months down rabbit hole after rabbit hole. Researching this stuff, reading about it. But at the same time, it's like, it's weird. You get this, like, resistance from people. Even, like, family members who kind of, like, I just get this sense that they're just, like, don't believe me or something. And that's really hard when you have, like, an invisible condition. Because especially one that you've spent your whole life trying to convince the world you don't have. You do a good enough job convincing the world you don't have it that they don't believe you when you actually say, no, I actually do have this. So I don't know. There's something about an official diagnosis that I think could be beneficial for certain reasons. And then maybe also for accessing support. I don't know what kind of support's out there. But if there is any support out there, I certainly would like to try to access it. There are a lot of areas in life that I struggle. And if there is an opportunity to get some kind of professional support, I certainly would like that. I don't know what that looks like. But, you know. Here we are, six, 8 months into this process. I've, you know, had not given up, but sort of taken a break from really knocking on doors. And then somebody posted this link to me, and that's awesome. So thank you for that. But anyway, I'm going to get into this this show. It's a 20-minute show. I'm just going to play a little bit of it for you. It's pretty cool. It's interesting. I hope the sound comes through. And again, this is on cbc.ca, and it's this show they do called You Can't Ask That, and it's people with different conditions answering questions that were submitted anonymously, which is kind of a cool concept. So this one is season 1, episode 4, and it's about autism. So, yeah, I'll play that for you now.
You Can't Ask That. High-functioning autism.
Silence on set. So, yeah, follow me, girls. Oh,
okay.
So, right here, you have two stools. So,
you can sit right here.
On your left-hand side, you have the cards. The questions are written on them.
So, you can pick one card at a time. You read the question out loud.
Okay.
And then you answer the best you can.
Okay.
Okay?
You ready? Sorry.
Almost. Sorry, again.
All right, sorry.
Yeah, it does feel like an interrogation.
Don't know.
Empire stories.
Let's go. First question.
Okay,
let's see what we got.
How does autism affect you?
Do you have, like, 3 hours? It's my brain, so it affects every single aspect of my life.
There's so much that it's affecting that you can't really specific one part of it.
It's not just something you can turn on and off. It's everything, all the time.
I have autism spectrum disorder. It's basically high-functioning autism. I can talk, I can read very well like everyone else, I can do well in school with tests, but it's socially that there's a problem. I think what affects me about my autism the most is actually how people react to it.
It is affecting me mostly through stigma. And there's a lot of, there's a lot of BS that comes from simply having, you know, autism or whatever, simply because you're diagnosed with something.
I was diagnosed earlier this year. My psychologist calls it high-functioning autism. It means I tick all the boxes of autistic, but I mask and have controlled some of the what people call symptoms. But I'm still autistic.
That guy, just, I paused it for a second. That guy, like, he looks to be, I don't know, maybe in his, like, 40s or 50s, and he's one of these people that you could meet and talk to and not know he's autistic, and I just kind of relate to that. It's like what he said is, like, you know, I tick all the boxes of autism, but I've you know, masked it, and, you know, but you're still autistic. And I feel like that a lot, like when I talk to people, and it's like I've kind of gotten through life, like, you know, masking and mimicking and mirroring and imitating and aping and all these different words for, like, just trying to, like, appear normal or something or whatever. But underneath that is this, all these different, like, layers of autism, like, I kind of describe it like software. It's like all these apps that I'm running in my own brain, so many of which, like, I had to create in my own brain, of, like, imitating others and then, like, running the app of, like, behavior, and they're constantly modifying, because then you, like, you run a behavior, but then it might not work in all situations, so then you encounter, like, awkwardness, and then you have to, like, tweak the app and reprogram a little and then keep running it, and then you have different apps running for different things in your head constantly, and it's like, it's, I'm realizing now at this age, like, after doing this for so long, that it's like, it's really tiring. It's like, it's one of the reasons why a lot of us are so tired all the time. We're just exhausted, because it's like, I'm like, I don't know. You start to feel like things are held together in a very precarious way. And one of the things I've been doing experimenting with in the last little while is just, like, letting myself be autistic, which is a weird thing to say, because how can you let yourself be something you already are? But it's like, let yourself, like, let some of these masks go sometimes. It's like, I'm a very different person when I'm alone than I am with other people. And it's like, I go to work and I put on this mask and I have all these, like, quote unquote normal behaviors but they're all, like, these efforts I have to make to, like, do it. And then when I'm home alone, it's like, even a lot of them, I'm still running these masks when I'm home alone, because I'm just so used to running them all the time. But, like, sometimes I'm starting to learn how to let them go. And it's like, there's this worry of, like, how I'm going to be accepted by other people, especially the ones closest to me, if I just start actually, like, letting my autism be visible. But I also just feel like I have to do it, you know. I don't want to keep that going. But I don't know. This is interesting. Like, you know, the number one question on this is, how does autism affect you? And I think one of the people there said it exactly right. It's like, it affects everything. This is your life. It's like, this is just how your brain works. This is your operating system. It doesn't turn on and off. It doesn't. You don't. Yes, sometimes sometimes I feel more autistic than I do at other times, you know, but that's like, you know, like anything in life, you're going to have, like, your stress levels affect you, or how you slept or what you ate, you know, all these things are right now, like, allergies are affecting me, or I find, like, you know, the amount of energy I have to use to, like, be social in like a work environment. It's like, after several days of working in a row, it's like I'm in, like, this sort of crash state where I have to, like, reboot the operating system, you know. So, like, those things happen, but how does it affect you? It's like, it just affects everything. It's just the way you are in the world, the way you process everything. So I don't know, this is all stuff I'm learning about now, and it's fascinating. Anyway, back to it.
Issue I see with Asperger's isn't so much the Asperger's, it's the fact that it's invisible.
One person with autism, you've seen one person with autism. You don't know what we look like. It's not a face.
The main reason it's on a spectrum is because it's so individual to each specific person, and the symptoms can manifest drastically from one person to the next.
I was diagnosed last year at 41, ASD needing level 1 supports, as per the DSM-5, where they also found that I had ADHD, learning disabilities, dyscalculia, some dysgraphia, audio processing disorder. What else did they find?
But I also have depression, social anxiety, probably some form of PTSD and borderline personality disorder. For me, it affects like my entire life, like how I talk to people, how I meet people, how I react to everything.
The thing with autism is that they'll find this, and then they'll find other things that show up with it. And they find physical things, and then, you know, they all link together. It's like this, like, interesting puzzle, I guess.
Next question?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, just pausing it again. I mean, that's interesting, too, because there are all these comorbid conditions, and it's like, the more research I do, the more it's like trying to understand these things. Because, like, for me, it's like, yeah, there's this autism Asperger's thing. Got ADHD symptoms as well, like pretty heavy. My whole life I've had like pretty significant like high stress levels, anxiety, depression, certain periods with times that I would probably classify as like bipolar, like with these just like massive ups and downs, and just, you know, a lot of addictive behaviors, like, you know, pretty much anything you can be addicted to at some point I've been addicted to. It's just pretty wild. And then I think also like long periods of depression. Like, I just feel like I don't even know what it's like to not be depressed, because it's just kind of how it is. I don't know what it's like to not be stressed all the time. I don't know what it's like to not feel anxious every day. Like, it's just, that's just like the normal baseline, which is, I'm discovering it actually could be part of the reason for my current immune issues, is because of like elevated stress levels for like a long period of time. Anyway, it's just interesting looking at that. And yeah, I think PTSD too, like I've looked at that, like I might have some PTSD symptoms from a lot of stuff. So anyway, it's just like you look at this and you go, yeah, okay, so autism is autism, but then it's like there's all these other things attached to it. And I used to look at like my depression, my anxiety, my like bipolar, my stress, and all this stuff, and just kind of be like, oh my god, like, am I just a crazy person with all these crazy things? But then the more I've learned in the last 6 months, 8 months, of about autism, and it's like, okay, like, so much of this is like related to that. And what's interesting, I just posted an article the other day, it's like, how much of the depression, like, let's pick, for instance, one thing, like depression, and you go, okay, so people with autism have higher levels of higher occurrences of depression. So you go, okay, well, is the depression caused by the autism, or is the depression caused by the autistic person's interactions with the world? Because so many autistic people struggle so much in life, and oftentimes can be bullied and taken advantage of, and just sort of chewed up and spit out by all these situations, and be like, live in like high stress levels because they have difficulties with work and all this other stuff. And then you look at all that and you go, okay, so are all of those things contributing to that depression, or is the depression itself like medically linked to the autism, or, you know, a combination? So anyway, it's just kind of neat to think about. I don't know. I wonder, because to me, I just was like, I had this list of like 7 or 8 things that, like, conditions or whatever, and then when I started really researching all this, it was like, oh, like, all of them can be connected to autism, so it's like, okay, that's different. And then, you know, some of the stuff I've read too, where you get people that are not diagnosed with autism, but have other things, like they're being treated for depression or treated for substance use or treated for anxiety or et cetera. But like, but then later on discover they're autistic, and you go like, it's like those treatments for those other things without recognizing the autism, it's like they're kind of just band-aids, right? And without getting to the root of the problem. Anyway, back to the video.
See what's on card numero deuce? Can you feel any emotion? What is
it's sad.
Can you feel any emotion? Can you be happy or sad?
This is a big stereotype. Yes. When you see a lot of things.
Now, I gotta be honest, that is an offensive question. I'm a human being. Of course I can feel emotions.
That's actually a huge thing. A lot of people think that autistic people are robots and that we don't have any empathy, but a lot of us actually experience hyper-empathy, like myself, because we are so sensitive to sensory input and things like that.
There's a kind of a comorbid condition that can occur with autism, which is called alexmithia, where it's like you do feel, obviously you feel emotions, but you don't know how to label it. Or sometimes you're just not even really sure what you're feeling at the time, and it kind of takes some time to process.
You know, I have my autism. I'm just like a lot of people. I do the same things that they do on a daily basis. I feel usually what they feel. Just because I have autism doesn't mean I can't feel the way some people feel.
Although I don't show much emotion, on the inside I feel a lot of emotion. Every day's different. Some days I'll be happy all day. Some days I feel different, but I don't show it because I'm afraid of what's actually going to be said about me behind my back.
I think people misinterpret how I'm expressing myself or my emotions. Some people would think I'm aloof or snob, like I'm hoity-toity, just because they're not reading me correctly. And no matter how hard I've tried, this is one thing that I'm not able to overcome.
Within my group of friends that have ASD, I find that there's really two types. They over-emote or they under-emote. And I find that I over-emote.
Kind of in the middle. Depends on the situation, really.
And I just think, like, I could be at a party, I could be dancing, and I'm enjoying myself, but then I'm not dancing enthusiastically enough, and then people think I'm not having fun, and it's, I don't know. I don't know how to do it any differently. That's the thing. So it's like,
why should it be that we need to express happy in a way that is the same as everybody?
Of course I can be happy or sad. Anybody says they can't feel emotion, they can't be happy or sad, is one of two things. They're either a sociopath or they're lying to you. And seeing as those sociopaths are very rare, they're probably lying to you. Next question, please.
Do you hate people? What is it?
Yes.
What?
Do you hate people?
Sometimes.
I hate everyone equally.
Do you hate people? Once again. Only if they give me reason to. People don't just hate people. You usually have to give them a pretty good reason. Hate is a very strong emotion.
Do you hate people? I don't hate people. Oh my god, no. I'm somebody that's like, I'm an activism and everything. I don't hate people, no.
I can easily answer that yes. But I try to do my best to be the better person and just leave any conflict alone.
I can say things when I'm out of control that I don't mean, out of anger. So yes, I may say to once in a while to a person, I hate you, out of anger, but then I feel really bad about it, usually guilty. So I immediately apologize. It's not in my nature to hate people.
I have a family I love dearly. My dad's actually dealing with stage 4 cancer right now. Like, do you think I hate him? No. Like, do you think I hate this random person on the street that just said hello to me? No. Like, I have no hatred for people unless you hate me first. And even then, I'd be like, oh.
I think the media often puts a negative spin on people with disabilities in general. A lot of times when you hear, like, shooters, oh, he must be autistic. Like, it's the first thing that they link them to. Which is really, it's really sad, because a lot of times if we are violent, it's directed towards ourselves. Autistic women will self-harm, will starve themselves, and then men often they might die by suicide. because we internalize a lot of our pain.
I think the stereotype came from autistic people spending long periods of time alone, perhaps, or not being social. And that's the misnomer right there, because we love to be social.
Yeah.
It's just
not in the same way
as neurotypicals.
Yeah.
Whoever wrote this question, this is the kind of question you ask somebody if you want to piss them off and make them hate you.
You can't ask that.
Hey, pause there. That's kind of a funny thing. Do you hate people? Anyway, it's an interesting show, hearing all these different people answer to these anonymous questions. Maybe I'll do one more, and then we'll get out of it.
Can you read body language?
Yes.
Sort of.
Oh, this is the worst.
I guess the easy answer is no.
No. Body language is something I've never been able to read on people. It's one of the things I'm still trying to learn, still trying to figure out how I can do it better.
I think for me, I find facial expressions extremely difficult with no context. People who are teasing or being ironic with a straight face just confuse me. And it's often I misread body language.
It is really hard for me to interact with people. It can be hard for me to read what somebody's intentions are and things like that. Like, I can literally ask my friends, like, are you angry at me today, or is it like just something that you're stressed out about? Because I have no idea. And it's really hard for me to process, even if I'm close to them, which can be really alienating at times.
Just pausing it there. This is something that I really relate to too, like the whole body language thing, or facial expressions, gestures. Like, I struggle with this every day, even with people that are close to me, like people I live with. And it's like this weird thing, because then you have to have these awkward conversations where you just have to stop and be like, hey, what's going on? Is anything going on right now? Are you like upset? Are you okay? Like, are you upset with me? Are you just upset in general? Or are you not upset at all? Am I misreading it? Like, you just have to like stop and have these like awkward kind of questions where you just kind of go, is anything going on right now? Because someone can be like stressed or worried or kind of like just in a hurry in their own life. And like, you're just like, but I don't know, like, I don't know how to interpret that. Is that directed at me? Is something going on? Because like, straight up, if you don't just tell me in clear, plain language, I do not have a fucking clue what is going on with you. That's just the reality of it. You know, obviously, if you're like angry and pointing a finger and yelling, then I'm pretty sure I can figure that out, that you're upset. But for the most part, anything that's less than like totally overt, I just don't get. And I find this at work too. Like, I'll be talking to people and they're like, just little changes in the way they're standing or their gestures or their facial expressions, or just something will change, or and I'll just kind of go like, I'm just like, I don't know what that means. Does it mean anything? I just, it's like a language I just don't speak. And it's really challenging to, you know, cause you know, so much of our communication, I'm told, happens through these like subtle things like body language, but man, I just don't get it. And it makes for, I think, like, on the one side, it makes for a lot of us with autism, like, living in sort of heightened states of stress, because we're always trying to figure things out and we're never quite sure what people are, their intentions are, and like what they're, you know, so we're always like kind of at this like heightened like level of alertness, like trying to figure it out. But I'm just trying to get better at just asking, and I know that can be annoying for people, but I just kind of go, hey, I'm sensing something right now. I don't know what it is. Can you just explain it? And if it's nothing, you can just be like, oh, it's nothing. But like, the thing is too, like, a lot of times when people talk, they'll say it's nothing, but there really is something going on. But if you say to me it's nothing, I'll just be like, okay, cool. And I'll just turn around and keep doing whatever I'm doing. So you can't expect me to just like pick up on something, because it's just not going to happen. So this one's really interesting, I find. Like, it's, and that's one of the things, like, I've struggled with my whole life, but I only like recently really been able to like name it and go, okay, this is what it is. This is why it's like this. But, you know, I also find like certain, for me, like certain hand gestures, especially, I can just take in the wrong way. Like my partner, for instance, like is a hand talker, and there are certain gestures that to me are like, I interpret as being like dismissive or belittling or controlling or aggressive. And I sometimes then react to that because like a certain hand gesture will happen. And then to me, that hand gesture is like belittling me or something, or dismissing me. Like it's somehow being rude to me. And then I'll react to that and just want to be like, what the fuck was that? Like, what is that? Like, you know, and then now the conversation is not a positive one, but like that gesture might not have been intended to mean that. So it's something that I'm trying to like work on, where like certain gestures happen and I immediately feel this like physiological response. Like I want to be like, fuck you, when I see that gesture, because I interpret that gesture as like an aggressive thing. But then I immediately feel that response in my body, and then I have to just go, hey man, that's that response. You know what it is. It's to that gesture, but it's not real. It's just in your mind. And then I kind of, okay, cool. And I let it go. And I'm getting better at that. Like letting that whole process of like seeing the gesture, reacting to it, catching it, talking myself, repeating to myself that it's okay, and then letting it go. And it's like, I can sometimes do that, run that whole thing in like a matter of a few seconds now. Whereas before it would bother me for minutes or even hours, or I would react and say something crappy, you know? So that's an interesting one for me, but like, I still see those gestures and I still have that immediate physiological response of like someone, like I interpret it as like, my brain interprets it as like somebody like talking down to me or belittling me or being like dismissive or something. And it's like, no. And I've talked to my partner about that, and she's like, no, that's not what I'm doing. And I'm like, okay, I get it. You're just like a hand talker. But in however my brain is interpreting that hand language, it's interpreting those words as aggressive. But that's not your problem, that's my problem. So like, I'm just trying to learn how to deal with that and how to like just process it. And like I said, it's been an ongoing practice, and I'm getting better at it. So now where I can sometimes run that whole thing, that whole sequence in like 10 seconds and then just let it go. Whereas like in the past, it would be something that I would hang on to like sometimes for days, and it would bother me. But you know, it's all communication, because it's like, we have to talk about it, because I then have to ask, like, what is that gesture? Like, are you, this is how my brain sees it. And then she's like, no, that's not what it is. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm just going to trust that I believe you, that you say that's not what it is. And then now the ball is in my court to learn how to process that. But I still, it's funny, because I still have that immediate, like, body reaction. I just feel like I immediately, like, tense up and, like, get defensive. And then I go, hey, man. I feel it happening, and then go catch it and go, there it is. There's that response. Let it go. So anyway, body language. It's fun. On to the video.
I kind of like had to teach myself and like kind of train myself.
You have to train yourself to do it.
To know.
Yeah.
Because stuff isn't taught to people. We're not, like, kids don't learn like, oh, this is what this means and stuff like that.
Yeah. We have to train ourselves in terms of body language. In micro expressions and mm-hmm. things like this. So that's why it's actually very exhausting for most autistic people to be in social situations.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't really go out much. I'm not very social. I've never been able to tell how people are actually feeling, how their social gestures, their moods. I never understand that. So I'm normally at home just by myself, where I feel comfy and safe.
They don't teach you that, because neurotypicals just apparently know.
Yeah, it's weird. They're all psychic.
Yeah, apparently they are. I don't know how that works. Next card?
Yeah, okay.
I just paused it again for a second, because that last thing she said there that I didn't actually catch last time I watched this video, but she says, talking about neurotypicals, she says they're all psychic. And I thought that's really cool, because that is kind of what it feels like. I saw another meme recently that was saying, you know, being autistic in this world, it's like you're playing a part in a play and everyone else has been given the script and you haven't seen the script. And, you know, anyway, it's kind of the same, like that idea, like they're all psychic. Cause I feel like that all the time. It's like you interact with people and you watch them all interact with each other and you just kind of go, it's like, they all know something that I don't. And this is another thing that I felt my whole life. It's like there are just all these like unwritten things and like little social cues, and it's a combination of so many things. It's like the social cues and the body language and the tone of voice, and even like within the language, like when people are speaking, it's like there's these layers and references and like this ability to like connect the dots that like I just don't have. And I'm always just kind of like fascinated and sort of in awe of neurotypical people and how they communicate, because it does feel, when you're watching it from an autistic point of view, it does feel like they are psychic. It's like they all just have this understanding with each other about so many things that like I have to like learn, but they just know. And it's like that information, that just sort of like the way to move through the world and navigate each other, and like all these like sort of unwritten things and subtleties, and I just don't, it does feel like everybody's psychic. It's a strange feeling, and you just feel like everybody knows what's going on except you, and you're just kind of walking around going like, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on? And having this feeling all the time, like you just don't know. And I guess that is why, you know, it's a lot easier to just be alone. Because then when you're by yourself, you know what's going on, you know. Anyway, I just wanted to catch that because I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. It's like they're all psychic. Yeah. Okay, back to the video.
Oh, this is a great question for me.
Are you just like that character in Rain Man, or like Sheldon in Big Bang Theory? Do you have savant skills?
My only connection to Sheldon Cooper is that I am a huge nerd.
I am Sheldon. In fact, that's why I went I got a diagnosis, because my partner and I were watching Big Bang Theory, and I was just watching Sheldon going, that's me. You know, I am Sheldon, except it's music, not physics.
My mom likes to call me Shelly, because I remind her a lot of Sheldon from the Big Bang Theory, so I'm going to go with Sheldon.
As soon as you say that you're on the spectrum, it's suddenly, oh, you must be exactly like Sheldon. And again, like the question asked, like, are you a savant? No. Like, really, no. Like, we're just people. I hate that show, and I hate that movie.
I hate that show, I hate that movie, and I'm not like Sherlock Holmes either.
Autistic people have the same rates of either intellectual disability or high IQ as the general population, with about a 2% difference.
All people with Asperger's, as far as I know, tend to be very creative. That's another thing with Asperger's, very creative, very unconventional patterns of thinking. So if you ever find people who have a very loud voice, don't seem to be able to modulate their voice, and never think inside the box, there's a very, probably a very good chance you're dealing with somebody with Asperger's.
In my opinion, a lot of like the so-called savant skills aren't like these magical brain wave powers, whatever you want to call it, that we have. It's more like we have interests that we're very, very in-depth and involved in. And that's why we know so much about the topic. We want to learn all about this thing, and that's why we excel in such things. I excelled in school because I loved books.
Most of us have like very, very focused interests. If I'm interested in something, I can absorb tons of information.
Learning about my hyperfocus is fantastic.
Okay, yeah. My hyperfocuses, sometimes they'll like fluctuate and I'll like add more, but there are some that are like always like a constant, and like the number one constant that's always like super high up is Pokemon.
Oh yeah.
Like that is my thing. That's been my thing since I was like 3 years old.
My hyperfocus is terrorism studies, actually jihadism in Syria. It's like honestly, a mental orgasm when I find things that I love about the hyperfocus. But like, when you ask me to learn something that I can't do well, like math, it's like a slog. You might as well just stick rusty stakes into my eyes. Like, I just can't do it.
Go.
Oh boy.
Aren't you just odd?
Yeah, I would say so.
But aren't we all?
Aren't you just odd? Yes, I am. I am just odd.
Yes.
Well, that too. Just as a whole, that too. It's like, I'm gay, I like Dungeons and Dragons, and Green Day. Like, yeah, I'm odd. Big deal. Is that autism? Is it just my personality? I don't know. I don't care. I'm very weird and I'm proud of it at this point.
There are no usual people. They don't really exist. The word normal is something that is shoved down our throat by a system that wants us to conform.
I don't think I'm odd, and everyone else in my family, my friends, they don't think I'm odd. But, you know, like I said, people who don't know, people who have disabilities, of course they're going to think you're odd. That's the thing, is that I always tell people, that's what I want everyone to do in this world, is disability, no matter what it is, you just give them a chance. Don't assume they're odd right away or that they're different. You got to give them a chance first.
Many people call me odd, weird, and I say yes, I am, because the normal life isn't fun. I like to be unique. I like to be who I am.
I always knew, like, I was just weird in general just because of my hobbies and things like that. When I got diagnosed, I had described myself from a quote that I read, like, from a song, and it was a loose bolt of a complete machine. So when I found that out, I figured out that it wasn't a loose bolt of a complete machine, it's just the cog was shaped a little differently, but it still ran. And that explains so much. It's like, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense now.
I felt a great amount of relief with diagnosis, because I thought I was broken. I thought there was something wrong with me. And because I'd been bullied, because of the way I was raised, you know, I was raised by parents who did not accept me for who I was. And I was tired because I was trying so hard to fit in and be like everybody else and could not understand why I could not be like other people.
We had to
Just stopped it there. Yeah, man, that was the first time I watched this video. That part just made me totally cry because that's exactly how I feel. It's like my whole life I've just been like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I figure it out? Why can't I function in this world in like normal ways? And I always come back to like these three things. I'm like, I'm smart. Like, I was in gifted classes when I was a kid. I have a high IQ. Like, I'm in the top 2% IQ. Like, I could join Mensa. Like, it's like, I'm smart. So it's not that I'm stupid, because I'm actually, if you put me in a room with 100 random people, there's one person smarter than me in that room. Like, that's the person that I want to talk to, actually. That's the person I'm most interested in talking to, because that's going to be like your crazy savant kind of person. But it's like, so this is the three things I've always struggled with. It's like, one, I'm smart. Two, I'm creative. Like, I'm an outside the box thinker. I'm always thinking, I'm always looking at things and thinking of how to do it different. And I've never been happy being like having to do things the way everyone else does it. It's like, I don't want to know how you do something. I want to know what is the end result we want, and then I want to just figure out how to do it. Or I want to look at how you do it, but I want to then just figure out my own way. I'm never going to do it the way you tell me you do it. It's just not going to happen. So it's like, I'm creative, but I think of all these things. I've come up with all these different concepts over the years and ideas and creative things. And like, you know, I'm not going to get into it, but I've actually had a few of my ideas stolen over the years, like by people I trusted, like, you know, business concepts that have been like taken from me and that I've shared with friends who I thought I could trust, who then took those concepts and went and copywrote things like names of companies and logos I drew and like marketing plans and things that I came up with. And then they took. So it's like, I have good ideas. I've just never been able to personally execute on those good ideas. And then the third thing is like work ethic. Like, I'm a hard worker. I work my ass off. When I'm at work, all I think about is work, and I just do it the best I can. And like, so many jobs I've had, people are like, you're one of the hardest workers we've ever had, or like, you're the best at this job we've ever had here. Like, it's like, so I look at these things and I go, okay, so I'm smart, I'm creative, and I'm a hard worker, but for some reason my life just always seems to fall apart, like all the time, and I just can't make it work, and I've struggled. And it's like, and like she said in this video, I've had this all the time, like this idea of like, well, what is wrong with me? What is wrong with me? And like this depression about that of like, what the fuck is wrong with me? And then now, like, learning about autism, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm getting it. It's making sense. Anyway, that's this video. I'm almost out of time. It's 58 minutes. Holy crap. This app I use only lets me do an hour. So I got to stop. But check out this video. I'm going to post it in the comments on the Facebook page under this episode. It's really worth watching. It's very interesting. Shout out to CBC for doing it. It's a really cool idea. And I don't know. I'm back. Thank you, Aspie Tribe. I'm digging it. So much more to talk about, but we're just going to keep doing this every week. I want to talk to you. If you are out there and you have Asperger's or autism spectrum disorder or high-functioning autism or whatever the hell you want to call it, I want to talk to you on the podcast. I want to learn from you. I want to share our experiences. Or if you're someone out there who lives with somebody with autism or Asperger's, I want to talk to you as well, because I've gotten a few messages from people whose partners have autism, and they listened to the episode I did with Jen and messaged me about it. So anyway, I'm out of time. I got 10 seconds left. I love you all. Peace, love, Aspie Tribe. Let's talk soon. Follow me Twitter and Facebook and Instagram at Aspie Tribe, AspiTribe. Love you. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.